Morning, family. My name is Stephen Aguaya. And 118 days ago, I lived here. 118 days. And it's been an interesting couple of months for my family. August 1st, we arrived in New York. I almost exploded our U-Haul truck under an overpass thing because you can't be on the highway with those. I didn't know. I believe that God lifted the bridge up because the passing, the height that I needed was 11 feet, and the bridge was 9 feet. So, you know, that's the sermon. So August 1st, we literally backing the truck into my parents' driveway. I got a call from Sam Powell, and he said that they would like to hire Hannah and myself to lead the campus ministry in Brooklyn, which is great. Yeah. So right now it's just me on paper. They're putting Hannah on in January, but she's working harder than I am. So it's just an on paper thing. And then August 4th, my dad got admitted to the hospital for, you know, it had been a couple times at this point, and he didn't come home from the 4th. On the 27th, he passed away. But I've never been more confident that someone's in a better place. Yeah. And the funeral was a blur. It was just, you know, lots of people, lots of faces. And I know a lot of you guys came, and I'm extremely grateful for everyone that has prayed for us, every phone call, text message, everyone that made the trip out there. I'm so grateful for the family that I have here. Thank you guys for your love and support, and from my family, Hannah, Lucas, and myself, but even like my mom and siblings. Thank you guys so much for how much you care about me and my family during this tough time. And things have been tough. Things have been very challenging. I so badly wanted to come back, and the first time that I share anything, and be like, oh, and think, you know, we figured it out. You know, like things are great. We have a place to live. We have our own place. We're all settled. Things are going great. But this is not the situation right now. Things have been rough. I almost got jumped a couple days ago. It was my fault. I parked in a sketchy alleyway in a sketchy neighborhood. And I was like, first of all, I'm from Baltimore, so you're not about to jump me. First of all, I'm not the one. I parked really close to where the group was, so like I was able to get in the car and kind of peel off before anything happened. But it's just kind of been that way. It's been just a very interesting couple of months, and of course, in just the way that, you know, my life works, you guys are continuing the study of Mark, and I thought I got away with one this time, because the passage is on the surface about money. And I was just going to, I had a sermon written out. It had 3 points and a title, which is completely unlike me, about money and like finance and being sacrificial. But that's not what this is about, at least right now. So let's read Mark 12. Mark 12, we're going to read from verse 13. It says, later they sent some of the Pharisees and Herodians to Jesus to catch him in his words. They came to him and said, "Teacher, we know that you're a man of integrity and you aren't swayed by others because you pay no attention to who they are, but you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. Is it right to pay the imperial tax to Caesar or not? Should we pay or shouldn't we?" But Jesus knew their hypocrisy. "Why are you trying to trap me?" he asked. "Bring me a denarius and let me look at it." They brought him the coin, and he asked them, "Whose image is this, and whose inscription?" "Caesar's," they replied. Then Jesus said to them, "Give back to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." And they were amazed at him. Yeah, I wanted that to be about money, so I didn't have to feel the implications of Jesus talking about something else. But as I did more reading, I left my notes at home in New York. So like in the recrafting of things, I was like, okay, well, something else is happening here. So you have these characters, the Herodians, who are only mentioned twice in the book of Mark. And who they were, well, they were a politically driven Jewish sect that were pushing for Herod to kind of be the ultimate Jewish power and political authority in the hopes that Herod would become very close friends with whoever was leading Caesar. If Herod could just kind of get powerful enough that Caesar respects and trusts him, then the Herodians get to benefit from having a friend of a friend in power. So that was their MO. Like, what we need to glorify Herod, because if Herod makes it, then we all make it. Herod was literally called the King of the Jews, which is an interesting title considering that Jesus is in the picture. Herod is called King of the Jews. People would very frequently say Herod is Lord as kind of a stamp of their allegiance. And it's funny enough, they did not get along with the Pharisees, because the Pharisees felt like they didn't want the Roman control at all. So with the fact that the Herodians were trying to befriend Roman government made the Pharisees upset. They collaborate potentially for like the first time in Mark 3 when Jesus challenges their stance on the Sabbath, and the conversation must have been like, well, the Herodians would come to the Pharisees and pretty much say, okay, so if this Jesus character is claiming that he is Lord of the Sabbath, that means that he is Lord, and if Jesus is Lord, then Herod can't be Lord, and we can't have that. And the Pharisees had a similar dilemma, because if Jesus is saying that what you guys are teaching in your hypocritical kind of power hungry religious whatever, if Jesus is challenging our authority, then we can't abuse an incorrect teaching of Scripture to the rest of the people. So even though we both disagree on other stuff, we both very much agree that Jesus must be stopped. And why is this important? Because one way or another, Jesus being Lord is disruptive to unrighteous personal agendas. If your thought is selfishly inclined, Jesus being Lord is going to mess that up. The Herodians and the Pharisees, they didn't get along, but they understood that Jesus being Lord messes up our plans. And that's the nature of Jesus being Lord. It's going to, because you can't be Lord as well then. No one else can be Lord if Jesus is Lord. And logically, if the benefits of Jesus being Lord trump the benefits of whatever your Lord may be, then it's logically incorrect to have any other Lord but Jesus. And the if is huge, and you have to wrestle with that if. But if what Jesus is communicating is true, and that surrendering to him is the best thing you can do for your life, then all the other stuff that we kill ourselves for, all the other sacrifices, all the other gods we worship are not important. And the if, again, is huge. So for me, I had to figure out, like, well, as challenging as this situation is right now, am I going to make Jesus Lord through it? Because it's very, very easy to put Jesus as Lord as kind of an agreeable but not right now thing when you're going through hard times. Like when things are very, very challenging and you just kind of want to fix stuff on your own, it's like it's very, very easy to, yeah, I agree that that's the case, but I'm not necessarily going to live out the implications of that right now because I'm going through something. So I had to I have to, present day right now, decide that through all of everything, I have to choose to make Jesus Lord. So that's kind of the characters that are happening right now. And then you jump down to their question. They're trying to stump Jesus by, you know, should we be paying taxes? Now, if Jesus says yes, then they can leave there and tell the people that, hey, see, Jesus is supporting the Roman government. He's actually not about you. He wants you to continue to pay unfairly to Caesar. He's probably working with them. There's many angles that they can take if Jesus says yes. If Jesus says no, then they just go to Caesar. Like, hey, he's telling people to not pay taxes. He's a criminal. So now they have him in their mind stuck. But it's very hard to stuck Jesus. He's an expert at getting out of these situations. So what he says is, bring me a denarius. Now, denarius is one day's worth of pay. So it's more than just money. It's symbolic for, this is what you're working for. This is what your hard day's work goes to. One coin. Whose face and whose name is on that coin? Caesar. Good answer. You guys are doing good. So then, who owns that money? Well, Caesar. All right. If that's the case, then it belongs to him anyway. Then give to him what is his. Which, even now, our money, even the money you have on you, on your body right now, isn't necessarily yours. As it wouldn't happen because there's laws preventing it. But if the government said, like, all right, guys, you know, pay up. That's taxes. Like, it's not necessarily completely your money, but just like the people here and now, though someone else technically owns it, you have a little bit of control of what you want to do with it. But whose face is on it? Caesar. Who owns it? Caesar. Whose name is on it? Okay, great. So what Jesus is saying here, on a very if you want to take the shallow approach, sure, that when it comes to taxes in this situation, pay your taxes, done. As unfair or not, because the people here are getting taxed very unfairly. So unfair or not, pay your taxes. But what belongs to God, give to God. Which I'm sure was kind of this initial confusion for the people listening, and then the realization of, well, what does belong to God? Everything. Everything belongs to God, but more specifically, you, the individual, you belong to God. We just had, you know, Thanksgiving, which is a great time to eat and be with family at the end of the day. And you may do this where you have kind of the going around the table and talk about what you're thankful for. And I wonder what will happen if, across the board, we decided to stop giving so much attention to what we own and start giving our attention to who owns us, and start kind of base our gratitude and our thankfulness in who owns us. Because that's what's happening here. That's what Jesus is communicating. It's like, sure, who owns the money? Caesar. Well, then it's his. Well, you know who owns you? God. No matter how you feel about that, it doesn't matter how you feel about that. The fact is, you are owned by God. You are completely 100% owned by God. But God, I don't necessarily have what I want right now. I'm trying the surrender to you. I'm trying to, you know, give my life, but it doesn't feel. You are owned by God. But God, I'm still, like, kind of financially in a rough place right now. You know, like, so as is, it's just me that gets a check, and it's not like they're paying a ton of money for campus ministers. God, I am owned by God. God, I just buried my dad. And I had to watch him. I mean, I respect my mom and siblings so much because they had to watch a lot more suffering than I did. But I was there. I was there the day of. I had to watch this man suffer in a way that I didn't think was medically possible with where we're at in 2017. Like I didn't know it was possible to suffer that much. I'm owned by God. And something about that ownership is supposed to trump everything else. It's supposed to be more valuable and more meaningful and just better than everything else. But I think it's important for us to know that before we even get into details of what that means, that regardless of how you came in today, you are owned by God. And when you can tell which boxes I packed that are currently in my mom's garage right now. You can tell which boxes I packed by which stuff isn't broken inside the box. When I packed the boxes, I mean, I own this stuff. So I was very, very careful to like make sure that everything, I mean, the box could fall, but the way that I packed every box with, I took empty juice cartons and let a little bit of air out to kind of provide buffers for things and put them inside the boxes. I've moved around a lot. I'm very, very good at packing. When I pick up a box and I can feel that something's broken in here, I probably didn't pack it because I put that extra effort into this thing that I own. Jesus, God, we are owned by him. The world is gonna present a very like, oh yeah, like let you know, give us your allegiance. And they're gonna pack up some jacked up boxes. And you're gonna move and you're gonna find out that everything inside is actually broken now. Because they don't actually care about you. The world actually is just trying to take from you and have you feel like you're gaining something substantial back. But God is very, very, like, very careful about how he moves us and how much and the care and concern and effort that he puts in to make sure that we're okay. Again, before we get into the details here, you are owned by God. If that's the only thing you remember, that and it's and the year's about to be done. We're like 2018 is in a couple of weekends. No matter how this has gone for you, you are owned by God. But the benefits of his ownership are only truly experienced in surrender. The benefits of God's ownership are only truly experienced when we surrender to his plan and authority. I was going to actually explain why it's important. I'm sorry, why it's a good thing that we're owned by God. But I think it, at this point, for me, it's more important to know that, again, support it or not, believe it or not, agree with it or not, know it or not, I am owned by an all-powerful, limitless, loving, perfect beyond comprehension God. And I can do whatever I want still, but the benefits of complete ownership are only, again, truly, truly experienced and understood through surrender. I can use my phone to hold paper down. I can make that the ultimate use of my cell phone, to hold down stacks of paper. But there's ways that I could also use my phone that are exponentially more meaningful than that. Because the owner, the guys that created the phone, spent a lot of time in putting it together, but even giving me a manual to know how to get the best use out of that phone as possible. And I think what happens a lot of times is that we settle for paperweights with what God has given us, but there's magic there. Like God actually has incredible universe-altering plans for our lives, but we just kind of sit on it, you know. Like like using a phone for a paperweight, or where Bibles become dashboard ornaments, and they just kind of sit. That's the extent of the Bible use, to sit in front of the car to tell people that walk past you when you park that you like the Bible. And there's that. You could use it for that, or you can use it as the instruction to follow the perfect plan that God has outlined for your life, which again is exponentially more significant than just having it sit there. This is also why simply acknowledging that Jesus is Lord and believing it with all your heart is still missing something, because he is. Like that's acknowledge it or not, the fact is Jesus is Lord. Like before you said it, before you believed it, before you even comprehended that was something that maybe you should think about, that was the fact. But then the issue is, well, is my conduct and the way that I'm living on a day-to-day basis, does that support the fact that Jesus is Lord? If you believe wholeheartedly 100% that today is the day that the final exam is going to be taken, and then you get asked if you studied, and you say, no, I didn't study, then who cares about the belief? You know, like it's the purpose that it's serving is just that acknowledgement. But the power is found through acting and behaving differently because of this acknowledgement. So just agreeing that God owns you doesn't cut it. There needs to be the life that changes in order to, again, to attain the full rewards of ownership under God. Now, rebellion to God's ownership is then also saying no to the rewards of his ownership. It just, logically, that's the outcome. If I invite you to a wedding reception and you say no, I'm not going to go, then you can't get upset for not being served the food that is going to be served at the wedding reception. You just can't. It wouldn't make sense, because it's there, it's prepared. There's literally the name tag is sitting for you right at that welcome table, and there's a plate set for you. But if you say no, I'm not going to go, then you're also saying no to the rewards. And I think this kind of helped me understand a little bit of. I had a conversation a couple weeks ago with this guy that was trying to figure out, like, well, if God is all loving, then why does he punish people with hell? And I was like, well, maybe it's not necessarily punishment as much as it is, well, he has something good prepared for us, and that's where he's going to be. It's like, well, come meet me here. I'm having a party. Here's the instructions to get to my house. And then if you say no, then you're not going to be at the party. And it's not so much this, like, I'm punishing you for not coming. It's like, you just didn't come. That's it. And if heaven is as great as it's claiming to be, then yes, anything outside of that is going to be really bad. And maybe that's how much God loves us. That it isn't so much this, like, come to me or I'm going to punish you. Maybe it's, well, everything you need is with me. There's nothing outside. So if you say no to me, then you're agreeing to take the nothing. And if that's the case, then I'm silly to say no to God. Then I'm just, and I've had to kind of settle for this, like, okay, Stephen, what's logically correct right now? Because I'm finding that emotions can kind of get all over the place. And I think if I'm thinking clearly, I would much rather fight my way to that party than sulk my way outside, frustrated that I'm not getting the benefits of what's happening inside the party. And I think that's helped me understand this. And I do think that kind of presents a much more, I think just a more accurate depiction of who God is and what he wants for our lives. It's not this, like, he can't wait to punish you for not listening to him. So he has everything you need at his house. So just go to his house. It's all there. Right? Yeah, that's who God is. And I think that's what we have to understand in our handing over authority to him, is it is, I mean, we benefit from that. We get to get, again, the rewards of his ownership. You guys look at Romans 8, and then we'll start to wrap up. But we're going to have the ushers pass trays. This is a combined sermon and communion. We're going to take the bread that represents God's body and the juice that represents his blood. Romans 8. So I've inherited a lot from my dad. This shirt is what he wore to my wedding. So there's a lot of stuff that we've taken, like, you know, physical things. I got his knees. My knees are very bad. But the, you know, there's actually, yeah, this is the family. My first service in Brooklyn, someone came up to me and somehow thought that it was encouraging for this person to tell me that, you know, Stephen, I think you only got hired because of your dad. Oh, thanks. And you know what? You know what? I kind of agree. I think that what my dad instilled in me over, you know, 2+ decades, the example that he set, his teaching and preaching style, that how much he violently protects his family, and how protective he is over about the church. Yeah, you're right. I probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. So sure, I'll take that. I inherited that as well. I think, but that's just physical gifts that my brother and I just kind of rummaged through his closet and took stuff. But the inheritance that we get from God is mind blowing. But it cost my dad, like, it wasn't free. The stuff that I got from my dad, I got it for free, but he didn't get it for free. My dad had to work very, very hard. My dad got his 4-year degree from in accounting in 2.5 years, while paying for his own school, while leading the teen ministry in Brooklyn and dating my mom. He worked extremely, extremely hard. He's saved a lot of money. He's put my mom in a situation now where she could, you know, she could just kick it for the rest of her life. He sacrificed a ton to make what we have now possible. The cost was heavy on him, and we get to inherit the benefits by simply just being in his family. I didn't have to work at all. All I need to do is stay his son, and I get the benefits of his hard work. Now, what we get from God was not free either. There was a very, very heavy cost. Romans 8 in verse 31, it says, "What then shall we say in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things?" The price was Jesus. And I mean, I sometimes get driven by guilt to want to give back, like, to my mom. Like, I do probably too much to try and help, because there is this, like, I've been given a lot, and I don't, you know, I think sometimes it's hard to humbly receive so much without feeling bad about it. Because it was expensive, you know, like that my, I mean, not just my dad, my parents have had to work extremely hard to get me what I have. They had to sacrifice a lot of luxuries to put my family in a situation that they did now. And goodness, God had to sacrifice his son. Like, he had to let, fatherhood has changed the way I look at everything in the Bible. Everything. Stuff that I thought I understood, not even close. Not even a little bit. I'm not sacrificing my son for anyone. Anybody. You're not taking my kid. I don't care. I can't see myself. Because for me to do that, I'd have to love someone more than my son. How? There's no way. And God looked at us, not because we were perfect or lovable or right with him, and said, all right, well, if that's what it's going to cost, if the ticket price for you having an opportunity to come to me forever is my son, sure. And goodness, talk about inheritance and sacrifice to make that happen. We are owned by God. And that was the cost to make that happen. And it's not meant to be this crippling debt feeling of being owned by someone. There's so much freedom now. There's so much freedom and power and love and purpose and meaning in your life now. If you surrender to the plan of the owner. Because look how much he did to own you. And if we all decide that this passage is not about money. What's 10% of yourself? You can't tithe you. God owns everything. Everything about you is owned by God, and he wants it that way. He wants that. Like all the stuff that you feel like, well, I don't like that part. God still chooses to want 100% of you. And he was willing to let his son die for it. And now we get freedom, we get family, we get each other. We don't mourn like the rest of the world. Goodness, the benefits of being owned by God are outstanding. We just have to conduct ourselves in a manner that allows us into the party at the end of all of this. And then eat with him. And the food will be great. It's got to be. It's got to be amazing. And this is stuff that I'm saying this in a mirror right now. This kind of wrestling with the realities of, okay, like through suffering, through hardship, through all of this, Jesus must remain Lord. And no matter how challenging things get, I need to remember that I'm owned by God. And I think a lot of the reason why I haven't, you know, honestly given up in areas that I felt like I could were just my memories of my time in Baltimore. I think just the love that I feel here. God is clearly here. Clearly. There's no doubt in my mind that God exists right here in this church. And I got a chance to experience that while I was here. So I'm going to be leaning on my time in Baltimore for the rest of my life because of how powerful and how real and how much I experience God's love and the power of family and the power of pushing through trials and persecution. I learned that here. And you guys get to have that all the time, which I'm, you know, honestly jealous of. But I'm so proud. I'm so proud to have got a chance to just be part of this family. I'm speaking for my wife and myself. This is home. This is home for us. And we are, again, very, very excited to even be here today in fellowship with you guys. But just let's hold on to this, that Jesus being Lord means that everything is going to be okay. But it also means that you have to get off that seat yourself. And above everything else, you are owned by a perfect God who can do a much better job of owning you than anyone else can, including yourself. And the rewards are outstanding. I love you guys. And now we're going to pray. We forgot. I'm going to pray for the bread that represents his body and the juice that represents his blood. God, thank you so much, Father, for loving us. God, thank you for looking at us and somehow seeing purpose and vision, God, and love and mercy for us. God, I pray that as we take the bread that represents your body, God, I pray that we never forget how expensive that was, God, and the cost of this relationship on you. God, I pray that as we take the juice, that we never ever take for granted how much you put into this, and how much literally works, blood, sweat, and tears went into this relationship even being an option for us. God, I pray that our lives every single day show how grateful we are for what you've done for us. Also, pray in Son's name. Amen.